Hello, fellow humans. Here we are once again. It's a Wednesday, and it's another episode of Getting Shiggy With, and I'm obviously Shiggy here behind a microphone in her bedroom, and her cat is somewhere purring his head off as he sleeps for once, as opposed to his usual running around like a tyrant. I don't know. It's not a word I hear often. I read it very often. So we are on episode 14, or season 2, episode 4, if you are so inclined. Remember, I am doing 100 of these videos. I mean, I am recording the video of this, but I am doing 100 episodes before I get to decide to quit or carry on. The power of 100 is very, very, very important, and I covered it a few episodes ago. I think it was episode 3. Yeah, I think it was episode 3. So in this season 2, or episode 14, I'm covering a bunch of books that inspired me or aspired or helped change and shape who I am currently in my 30-something years of existence on this planet as a human. And what I've quite enjoyed over the last couple of episodes is each book has segued from a paragraph or being mentioned into me buying the other book, which is something that I do quite regularly. And the previous episode was Seth Godin's Linchpin, which was amazing and still is an amazing book. And the section that I really kind of bit down on was him talking about the resistance. And I only kind of touched the surface on there because I really wanted to look at the book that it was inspired from. There are many other sources because he talks about the demon and the creative aspect of you and the muse, which also stems from this book, which is Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art: Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles. So this book, obviously, this is a segue from Seth Godin's Linchpin, and what it does is it pulls out a lot of ideas and kind of, I could only call them isms because I can't really think of a word to refer it to, but basically you'll be sat there reading this thing going, me too, me too, me too, hashtag never felt so seen. Because it really does reflect a lot of what we feel, a lot of the limitations that we go through, and also gives you ideas on how to kind of work through them. So doing the usual thing that I try to do here, even though today I'm getting a weird, funny feeling of resistance against trying to pull out any stories, even though whilst I was reading this book last night, I felt inspired. I'm just like, holy crap, yeah. But that was the yeah for now. And here, and the last few days of 2019, and also it's the run-up to my birthday because I, you know, finish my Earth revolution at the beginning of January when everyone's either hungover, drunk, and or broke. So I don't tend to celebrate it. I tend to stay very much at home in my onesie and just switch the world off for a day. But this book is great. And in the next section, I'm going to talk about how great it is. It's split into three little books. But stories, I'm trying to pull stories for this one. And this resistance is there. I can feel it. The little lizard on my back kind of going, no, we are not going to do stories today. We are going to sit here in awkward silence. I don't know what that was, but that's basically what my resistance sometimes sounds like. Also sometimes sounds like Stewie. Human, what did you use? That was terrible. I apologize. So I think this book came into my lexicon in the wake of my personal training. So I started personal training after the Olympics. I read a book called Ignite the Fire by Jonathan Goodman. I think I mentioned that before. That book should actually be reviewed at some point. And basically went through a whole bunch of steps with that book that helped me kind of realize that you have to interview places. Beyond just you being interviewed, you have to interview them because it's a in-person service. And if you are not happy, then how are you going to sell a product that requires happiness when it comes to health and fitness? Because you have to be the cheerleader, right? So I think this book kind of came into play when I had moved to Pure Gym. And rather than being a fitness coach at Virgin Active, I was now a personal trainer. And if you're not familiar with what Pure Gym is, i.e. you do not live in the UK, the way it works is as a personal trainer, basically you give 15 to 20 hours of yourself during a week. And that time is split up into, I had 3 5-hour shifts whereby you are on the gym floor, you teach classes for free, you clean up equipment for free. Basically, it's just free labor, right? Instead of being paid what would effectively be the London living wage of about £9 an hour, we get, you know, it's a trade, right? Give 15 hours, we get to hypothetically pull clients off the gym floor and charge them for our services. So that's the idea. And it did work. Not going to lie, it did work. It took me a while to kind of get there. But what I really enjoyed, the War of Art gave me the space and understanding to know that, like, I hate going up to people on gym floors and doing the usual crap that everyone else does, which is, hey, what are you working towards? What are your goals? Tell me about what you are and who you, what you are and who you do, what you do and who you are. I mean, you can ask those questions, but it might be a little bit forthcoming if you've managed to pull someone's managed to get someone to pull their headphones off whilst they are really hoping to blend in with the furniture. So having studied and been told, you know, this is how you do things, this is how it works, this is how blah, 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 I took advantage of how I would want to be approached in a gym and how I would look for a coach as well. So if I go to the gym and I've got headphones on, you leave me the fuck alone. Like, legit, do not come towards me. Like, you can smile and walk on, but smile and walk on. Do not stop in front of me. Do not touch me. And do not indicate for me to take my headphones off. Like, you have no right to any of that. And that's what I had the assumption of too. Only because, again, with kind of this book and Ignite the Fire and everything, I realized that I wanted to work with people who were like me. You know, they're there for a purpose. They're not there for a long time. They're there for the benefits, right? Because I hate gyms. Regardless of who you, like, what you think you know about me, I genuinely dislike gyms. They are box spaces. They are like, I always have this visage image of hamsters, like beefy hamsters in a cage, which is the gym, like on a running wheel, just kind of looking beefy as hell, just going, oh, look at me, beefcake, and doing, you know, weights and everything. And then you got the smaller svelte hamsters preening themselves whilst they're using the good girl, bad girl machines, or you know, doing hip thrusts and trying not to make eye contact with the resident sleaze bag and all these kind of things. Literally, it's just like a rat race in the gym, right? And I don't really want to prescribe to that, but I do enjoy the benefits I get out of it. I know with my family background, like, hearts are an issue. Blood clots and heart issues are a thing. And my heart is weird in that if I do any style of exercise that requires a lot of exertion, my heart rate goes from a nice resting, I think the lowest my heart rate's ever been and still alive is 42 beats a minute. My average is usually about 58, 60. But I can go from that, from resting, or if I'm walking around, it's usually sits at 130 already, to 200, right? Sitting in the 190 zone for me is normal. It's not pleasant, it's normal. That's just where my heart goes when I'm doing stuff. I don't even know why I was talking about that. But yeah, so I need to look after my heart. And that's why I do a lot of physical fitness. So massive divergence into my personal world of why I hate gyms and stuff, which I probably will expand upon in the next season. I'm trying to think of what to do next because it's coming soon. Gyms are horrible, right? They are horrible. They are based very heavily on an industrial kind of style of fitness, a very systematic kind of, you can go in, be shown the ropes in about half an hour and then left to your own devices. If you want to kind of up your game, then you have to employ a personal trainer, of which, you know, being in courses, I used to constantly do courses just to keep my CPDs up and all that jazz, just a massive money waste. The quality of trainers was questionable. And I'm not going to put myself on a pedestal much, but I know my shit and I know how my methods work because I've done a lot of research. I ask a lot of questions. I have no problem emailing people in the top of their field and asking them questions. Whether they answer or not is up to them. But, you know, I practice what I preach as well. So everything that my clients have ever done is something that I do, which is part of my creative muse, my demon, right, is understanding or trying to figure out how the human body works. So the War of Art kind of gave me an idea to look into how I best work and how I can best serve people. Because rather than me sitting there like a gloomy little insecure person going, oh, I hate all of this people, just flip it and be like, how can I help them with the skills that I have? What are my skills? Making workouts fun, making it more of a social get-together as opposed to a slog in the death trap, you know, all these kind of things. So I did that instead of going up to people going, hey, what you like, you know, do you want to train? Like, let me get some money off of you. I need money to live. I haven't bought vegetables today. I just trained, you know, I went into the free weights area because I knew I could lift and gained the respect, weird tribalism, of the free weight guys. You know, whenever you walk in, the guys actually are quite respectful, regardless of what people think and what people say when they're from the outside looking in. If you go into these spaces and you make the space your own and you don't, you know, project your own ill-perceived insecurities onto other people, you come in, you do the work. Everyone's there for the same reason. They'll just be like, cool. You know, they'll work in with you. They'll help you out. If a weight is a little bit too heavy, you've done your one rep max and you're literally wasted, you know, people will help you. So leading by example, I managed to bring a lot of female clients into the free weights area and all the dudes were totally respectful of them, which made them more comfortable in being in the area, which made them more inspired to do the work to get what they wanted. Now, initially, everyone kind of goes across the aesthetics, the body side of things, looking blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, it always ends up being an internal boost in confidence, in capability and capacity. That's literally what my muse in fitness became with women, especially with guys. It was the same thing as well, you know, getting them up to a higher level, but I had more female clients. So that's not the most exciting of stories, but it's the most inspiring of stories because I finally found a groove in fitness that worked with me from this book. So much so that when I was doing the Pure Gym thing, I wanted to kind of progress myself a little bit more. So I started doing classes. I designed my own movement class based on my background in martial arts, and capoeira and gymnastics and everything, and just designed this really approachable, class for people who don't really do movement, which is a weird thing to say. Cause if you walk, if you step up, if you step down, if you sit, you crouch, you crawl, everything, you are moving. But I made it accessible and that started off and it kind of was going okay. But then my uncle passed away. Ah, there's the resistance. I see. Okay. This has been happening a lot where, you know, things happen and all of a sudden a lift happens and you start paying attention to it. Self-awareness is super fun. So yeah, weirdly enough, through Pure Gym, my auntie was the first one to find me. She kind of called Pure Gym and got my number and everything and informed me that one of my closest uncles had passed away. And that kind of started a chain of events of conversations, both good and somewhat unpleasant within family members. At the same time, I was being headhunted for a gym, a boutique gym that was opening around the corner. And at the same time, the manager at the time at Pure Gym really didn't like me because, you know, customers were asking me, this is broken, when is it going to be fixed? I'm like, you know what, I don't know, it's really down to the managers, they're not really telling me anything, which was the truth. I like the truth, and apparently the truth in corporate settings, no matter how casual they may be, is not a good idea. So, yeah, I got a dismissal. It was not a good one. The way he did it was actually naughty, for want of a better phrase. But I was too busy dealing with family fuckeries, and I had to fly off to America and do all that jazz. That's like my life, really, you know. Over the lot, what was that? That was 2013, 2014. I think it was 2013. So 2013, 2015, 2019 has been nothing but family fuckeries. That's why I feel weird. Okay, fine. Also, it's the run-up to my grandmother having her first aneurysm thing. Yay, this is meant to be a joyful podcast. No, it's not. It's whatever I want it to be. So all of that was happening. So it was like a bit of sweet with a bit of sour. Whilst I was getting fired, I was getting hired, and then having to fly over and deal with family issues. So beyond that, my DJing was obviously still going strong. So the War of Art kind of gave me hope and understanding, because this resistance thing is always present. It lives on the top of our brain, in our amygdala. What was the phrase that Seth Godin said? The lizard brain is horny, hungry, scared, and tired, or something like that. So all the basics that we have, that are the basic fundamental existences that we go through. And doing the Rumpelstiltskin thing of naming it, giving it a name, giving it an identity and everything is really, really important. And if you find you have these inexplicable moments where you don't really know what's going on, you don't know why you feel the way you are, this book will help you in at least trying to give yourself the right kind of questions that will elicit a primal response in your body that could either be a yes or a no response if you are sensitive enough to it. Now, I realize that we're getting a little bit woo in statements here. I am a little bit woo, but you don't need to know that right now. So I'm going to give you a little break, and we're going to go into the structure and some PowerPoints of the book. So here we are with the book. I'm going to obviously read a passage or two just to whet your appetite. Yes, whet your appetite into the world of Stephen Pressfield. He does have a large collection of rather good books. The other book, which I wouldn't say really influenced me so much, but it has been really handy, or the two books of nonfiction that he's written, is Turning Pro and The Warrior Ethos. There's Do the Work, which I haven't read yet. I'm pretty sure he's done others since. I might have a new one on the Kindle, because that's a thing. So The War of Art, Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles, is a small book, I think, not quite self-published, because it was published by Black Irish Books. It has a total of less than 200 pages. It's 100 and officially, oh, someone's messaging me, 165 pages. All right, so officially 165 pages, which is a pretty decent quick read. And the way that it's designed is you have I suppose mini chapters. So it's separated into three books. Book one is the resistance. So establishing, you know, the relationship. So book one, resistance, defining the enemy. Is this an enemy? Book two, combating resistance, turning pro. And then finally, book three, beyond resistance, the higher realm. So the state of being flow, understanding the experience of self, the conscious self, the subconscious self, the authentic self, hierarchical orientation, the definition of a hack, blah, 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 blah. So rather than jumping, getting ahead of myself, I'd like to go back to the beginning, which is just before the book one section. Because Stephen Pressfield has a very accessible way of writing, which is definitely not a mistake. He does write. He writes and writes and writes. And one thing I like about this is a section I wasn't going to read, but the way he does it is what I do. Literally, after the foreword, he writes what I do, and it goes through his day. You know, and a really important part here is when he actually starts. It's about 10:30 now, and I'm quoting this. It's about 10:30 now. I sit down and plunge in. When I start making typos, I know I'm getting tired. That's 4 hours or so. I've hit the point of diminishing returns. I wrap for the day, copy whatever I've done to a disk, and stash the disk in the glove compartment of my truck in case there's a fire and I have to run for it. I power down. It's 3:30. The office is closed. How many pages have I produced? I don't care. Are they any good? I don't even think about it. All that matters is I've put in my time and hit it with all I've got. All that counts is that for this day, for this session, I've overcome resistance. And I like that because it kind of it applies to everything, right? It applies to whether you are a full-on musician who is trying to pull out, you know, got creator's block and you're just trying to pull out this song that's here that you're trying to hold on to with all your might, but for whatever reason it doesn't want to come out, versus being an elite spreadsheet freaking guru who needs to design this formula to create, you know, the one solution for the entire multi-spreadsheet cross-referencing monster of a project, and you can't find that one bit of this formula to make everything work. Because that's art too. Whether you're a scientist, whether you're an accountant, whether anything that you are, you know, from the obvious creative to the less obvious creative, if you have to pull something from your head, you are a creative. You can fight me, you will lose. Fact is, everything that everyone does at any point is a creative act, okay? The annoying drilling outside is a creative act because of what the end product is. Why they're doing it has an end kind of reason to it. Why I'm doing this has an end reason to it. What that reason is not for me to be worried about. And that's what this book has kind of pulled from me, is the fact that sometimes you do things because you do them, right? You do things because there is this, getting a little bit woofy now, brace yourself. You have this universal energy that drops itself into you and decides that you are the person to do the thing. And you are an asshole if you do not do the thing that the universal intelligence has put into you to go do into the world. So, you know, there's your little kick up the butt. But ultimately, with this book, it's great in the fact that talking about the resistance, there's so many aspects of it. You know, let's just, before I hit the unlived life, which is a section that I really want you to listen to, you know, you've got the resistance greatest hits. The resistance is invisible. The resistance is internal. The resistance is insidious. The resistance is infallible. The resistance is universal. It never sleeps. It plays for keeps. It's fueled by fear. Openly opposes in one direction. It's the most powerful at the finishing line. It recruits all allies. Procrastination is its buddy. There's two parts to procrastination. Diverting yourself to sex, because, you know, that's what the resistance does sometimes. Self-dramatization, self-medication, victimhood, unhappiness. You know, it goes on and on and on, which is absolutely amazing because it covers so many factions that you really need to pay attention to. And here's the thing. I'm getting really close for this because this is really, really important. With the book, pay attention to sections, words, sentences, paragraphs that make you uncomfortable. That includes you just like fobbing it off and just going, oh, that's nonsense, because that's the resistance. That is a resistance in your brain trying to pull you away from paying attention to the bullshit that you are believing, the bullshit that you are living on a day-to-day basis that's limiting you from all the shit you want to do, right? Pay attention to those really, really subtle kind of like shrugging off of information, of ideas. Not just with this book, but with everything, right? Because this thing is so amazing. When you get it, when you understand it, when you see it, and especially when you share it with other people, and then other people are like, oh my God, me too. That's the best. Because that's two of you versus one of the resistance, because the resistance can and is the same in other people. But when there's two of the demon of the creative light versus one of these people, one of these resistance lizards, like, lizards are really basic. When you get over their wizardry bullshit, lizards are actually quite basic because that's their primal brain and we have neocortexes. And now I'm getting silly. Anyway, let us move into what did I want to? Yeah. So I'm just hitting the first paragraph, first two paragraphs of this preamble before the main book goes into its thing, because I think this is really, really succinct. Again, a word that I've seen and read a lot, but not heard out loud. But it gets to the point. It's very much to the point. So here we go. The unlived life. Most of us have two lives. The life we live and the unlived life within us. Between the two stands the resistance. Have you ever bought home, Let me start again. Have you ever brought home a treadmill and let it gather dust in the attic? Ever quit a diet, a course of yoga, a meditation practice? Have you ever bailed out on a call to embark upon a spiritual practice, dedicate yourself to a humanitarian calling, commit your life to the service of others? Have you ever wanted to be a mother, a doctor, an advocate for the weak and helpless, to run for office, crusade for the planet, campaign for world peace, or to preserve the environment? Late at night, have you experienced a vision of the person you might become, the work you could accomplish, the realized being you were meant to be? Are you a writer who doesn't write, a painter who doesn't paint, an entrepreneur who never starts a venture? Then you know what the resistance is. There's a little poem here which I'm going to absolutely murder. One night I was laying down. I heard Papa talking to Mama. I heard Papa say, to let that boy boogie woogie, because it's in him and it's got to come out. John Lee Hooker, Boogie Chillin'. So there we have the kind of the intro, the start, the powwow into your face kind of thing. And then it goes into the first part of the resistance, defining the enemy, with the Dalai Lama saying the enemy is a very good teacher. So I don't really want to spoil, I can't even call it a spoil the book for you, because it's literally just a huge collection of ideas, talking points, and actionable points that you can actually do when you come to the realization of what's essentially your self-limiting belief system, right? The resistance feeds off of self-limiting beliefs, especially when we create them. Another story I'll give you, yesterday, right? I've been having a little bit of a problem with one client's audiobook, because that's what I do now. For the past year, I've been editing, creating audiobooks and podcasts. Not too dissimilar to this one, although this is my baby. This is my private little bundle of joy. There is Audio Gorilla coming out, shameless plug, for my Audiofy business. But so I've been having this one problem with a specific client and finishing editing her audiobook, because we recorded that audiobook literally 5 days after I discovered my mother killed herself. And I really wanted just life to be normal and to just get on with things, even though my whole world had been flipped upside down and like just my entire brain had been TP'd with used toilet paper. Like literally shit was everywhere, but I just needed to keep on going. So this lady flew over from Ireland and we did it. We recorded it. It was fine. I managed to just like put myself in a little bubble for that day and really enjoy her company. She's also kind of a mind coach, life coacher. I don't think she really does life coaching, but she does kind of business and corporate mindset and stuff as well. But she's an absolute riot. And having come back from all of that and, you know, I'm trying to tie up everything, I still keep on having this mental roadblock with this audiobook that I'm doing for her. And the chapters are coming through, but so, so slowly. It's ridiculous. And I'm aware of the resistance. But the crazy thing is, being a Kenyan kid, right, I might be a bit of a third culture kid, and I am a third culture kid, but by the same token, I am completely unapologetically Kenyan. Having parental influences and parental issues and parental gaslighting, for want of a better phrase, in my head, as well as my own self-limiting gaslighting expectations and issues and beliefs in my head, was this kind of like double downing negative spiral of, why are you such a loser? Why the fuck can't you finish this audiobook? What the fuck is wrong with you? And like, look at you, you're such a failure. Just get the book done. And as much as I would love to just get the book done, like I just couldn't. And for the longest time, I couldn't figure out what the fuck it was. And then I realized the association of pain from that time in May was completely attached to every single sound that I was listening from my client in her audiobook. So I was due to get that whole thing finished in September, and we're now in December. And as time went by, I just wanted to reach out and tell her what was going on. But my own self-limiting beliefs were like, you can't tell her that. That's literally the lamest excuse ever. Why do you think she'll believe you? Like, why would I believe you? You're saying it and we still think it's lame because you should just do the fucking book. That's my self-talk. I am an absolute savage to myself. And then you want to hear my grandmother and my mother as well. where there's a little bit, like my mom has an American accent, my grandmother has an African accent, and it just, it gets crazy up in there. So I just get into the spiral of self-crippling kind of limitations and just avoid the whole fucking thing. I'm like, right, fuck it, I'm out, you know, peace out, bitches. So I reached a point yesterday, and I'd revealed and talked to this to a couple of you know, friends and clients and stuff. And I'm like, I just want to tell her what's going on. But I'm really scared that she's just going to be like, well, if you can't fucking do it, then let me find someone else, you piece of shit. That's what I was scared of. Like, I don't want to be a failure. Fucking hell. So yesterday, I just had a go moment where instead of sending professional emails or whatever, because professional emails are dry as shit anyway, I sent a voicemail on Facebook, just so frank. I literally had my Bluetooth headphones in. I was walking up a hill a little bit out of breath after jujitsu and just went boom. Said everything in about three voice messages, about 3 minutes worth of audio. And she was just like, dude, I totally understand. Like, you are going through the shit. And please, please don't ever feel guilty or embarrassed or ashamed. You know, for one, those things are shit and let that shit go. She literally said that, which was amazing. And two, you know, I didn't have a deadline or a timeline with this book. So just, you know, it'll be great if you finish it, but I'll totally understand if you can't finish it. And that was amazing. You know, just being ballsy enough to ignore the fucking lizard brain, ignore the fucking resistance. And mine was loud, right? I mean, for me to be 4 months delayed with a book that, like, my turnaround with audiobooks is literally 6 weeks or less. For me to be delayed this long was just insane. And the lizard brain, the resistance was just lapping it up like honey. Actually, what do lizards like? I don't know. Like a stream of ants. A stream of honey ants. There you go. Big butted honey ants, honeydew ants, just lapping it up. And I didn't have a way out. I didn't know what to do. I was just drowning in my own sick kind of thing. So for her to be as gracious and understanding as possible is just testament to the fact that as and when you can see when your lizard brain is pulling some shit over your eyes. I'm saying shit a lot in this podcast. Oh, well, it seems to be helping. When resistance pulls wool over your eyes, it's really important for you just to double down on yourself, but also release yourself and just do the thing, because 99% of the time, if not 100% of the time, whatever you think is going to happen, whatever your brain conjures up, whatever the resistance conjures up to stop you from doing the thing, won't happen, or won't happen as badly as you think it will do. Like, you know, if someone's disappointed, they'd be like, yeah, I'm disappointed, but you know what? It's at least you told me. Which is way better than what our brain kind of goes, I'm disappointed. You will now cower before me as I poke you with pokey things and you go to hell. Like, that doesn't happen. Right? Or, you know, you go on stage and you fuck up a performance and then you get tomatoes thrown at you. If someone throws tomatoes at you, then that is assault and you can put their ass in jail. So always a silver lining. So I didn't really want to get super deep into the book, The War of Art, which, yes, by the way, is a slight pun on The Art of War, which is a completely different book. I haven't read the book yet. I've read bits and bobs of it, but it's huge. I think it's like a 500-page monolith of a book by Sun Tzu. I've probably completely butchered that, but it's The Art of War versus The War of Art. The Art of War has tactical plays on, you know, war. I wouldn't say war through the ages, because it's more kind of before World War One and everything, but it uses that and a few kind of other philosophical ideas and stuff. So that's a totally different book, but Stephen Pressfield, in his writing wit, used The War of Art. And many people, when they write them, kind of get them confused accidentally. I don't think anyone's actually bought the wrong book when they talk about creativity and then The War of Art, The Art of War. And they're like, these are two totally different things. Did you mean The War of Art? Yes. So I'm rambling now because all of a sudden I feel really excited. The brain is weird, man. Like, all of this is weird. And I think I'm going to leave it there with my kind of mini weird book review plus a story that happened literally just yesterday, and I'm still kind of processing and accepting the acceptance and love that I've received from a client who is just the most amazing person ever. I don't know where I started sounding like a moose there. I think it's time for us to wrap this up, don't you? Boom. And once again, that's this episode done. I hope it's been interesting in some way, shape, or form. If you have read the book, go read it again. If you haven't read the book, obviously go and read it because it's amazing. It's less than 160 pages. And it's a super quick read, and it's highlightable and actionable and just an absolutely beautiful book for all creatives. Everyone's a creative. If you wake up and go do stuff during the day, you're creative. Even if you don't, you're probably creative in your head. So it's really important that everyone goes out and gets this book. Shameless plug without any affiliate links because, I don't know. I just wanted to share things without pressure of business. So, yeah, that's number four, episode four done, number 14 of 100 done. Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art, Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles. If you have any questions, as usual, you can send them via email. It's hishiggy@shiggy.co.uk. If you're new here, you spell my name, S-H-I-G-G-I. It's in the picture for the podcast. And hopefully you manage to find me at anchor.fm/shiggy or on iTunes or Google Podcasts. Not iTunes anymore. They've changed it to Apple Podcasts now, haven't they? Anyway, I'm on all the popular platforms, I think. If I'm not on a platform and you think I should be on a platform, send me a message. You can also find me on social media. I'm a bit of a social media gremlin. I'm on Instagram as Elshig, that's E-L-S-H-I-G. I'm on Facebook as Shigimus, S-H-I-G-G-I-M-U-S. I'm on TikTok as Elshig. Or is it Elshigimus? I have one in the backup profile. Not quite active there, but I spend so much time on there. It's so bad. I'm on Snapchat. I'm on Snapchat as Elshig as well, I think. Where else am I? Twitter at Elshig. Constant. I'm consistent here. And yeah, my website, I've broken my website, shiggy.co.uk, but I will fix it at some point. My winter hibernation will be starting soon. This is where I take 2 years off of the end of the year because A, Christmas that I don't celebrate because somewhat Jewish-ish, and B, birthday, which is after New Year's. So also, no. Yeah, that's all I got for you today. Wherever you are in the world, whatever time you're hearing this, just know that I love you. And I may not have even seen you, but I love you because you're human. I love you even if you're not human. I love you if you're an alien. I love you if you're the secret sock that has disappeared in my washing machine for the third time this week. Okay.